Save big on brunch for mom, all in the Kroger app. Get 16-ounce packs of flavorful Angus 90% lean ground sirloin for $4.99 each with a digital coupon. Then buy two, get two free on 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger, less than 5 miles away. Or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
This show is brought to you by The Makery, the podcast network for makers.
Well, well, well. Welcome to Knife Talk. This is a podcast for knife makers, knife enthusiasts, DIYers, everybody. I'm Jeff Fader from Fader Knives. I'm here with Craig Lockwood of Chop Knives, Mareko Momasi, Momasi Fire Arts. And we're very excited because we have a guest. We're about to go on vacation and we had a guest come in. Our guest is Quentin Middleton of Middleton Made Knives. Quentin is considered one of the new school knife makers who's really had a long history in knife making. In terms of culinary knives, he is forging his own way. He's a very honorable guy. He's someone you should look up to, and I'm very, very lucky to have him here. Quentin Middleton, how are you?
Hey guys, how y'all doing, man? It is an honor to be in the air. Y'all finally got me on the show, so thank y'all so much.
Well, you're the man. You're one of those guys that I mean, when I first started in, you know, when I saw knife makers, you know, younger than me or my age, it was you. It was you and a few other people, but in like magazines and newspapers, it was kind of hard to not see you. I knew about you before I knew about Bob Cramer. So
It
was one of those things that, like, I mean, you hit the New York Times, Wall Street Journal, all the great places. And no, you're an awesome knife maker. Awesome and an awesome person.
Well, thank you.
And you two have a history as well. So you two recorded a full blast together a couple of months ago as well. So anybody listening, go back and listen to Jeff's full blast. He gets pretty deep with Quentin, and it's pretty cool. So we're going to talk about what Quentin's been up to over the last few weeks, which is something quite huge. But before we do that, let's just talk about what we've been up to. Let's start the show as we normally do. Mareko, how's your week been? And have you roasted to the point where you're fully cooked yet?
No, I've been able to stay cool. The weather has gone down, but on the 4th of July, my back went out, and it wasn't sudden thing. It was like, and this happens from time to time, where like I was crawling around trying to help my son find one of his toys or something like that on the ground, like in his bedroom. And I felt this like this little twinge in my back, my lower back. And that occasionally happens. So I was like, all right, I hope that stops there. But over the, it got worse and worse and worse, to the point where like we had plans to go out to my in-laws. We're going to hang out there and go like barbecue and just spend the day out there. They got a dog who freaks out with the fireworks. So they were staying there and we wanted to spend time with them. And I almost was like, I'm not going to go. And then my son, who's 4, freaked the fuck out. He's like, no, I don't want to go unless daddy's there and all this shit. And I was just like, all right, I think I can at least sit in the car ride to get there. It might hurt getting in and getting out, and then I can sit when I get there. I underestimated like how much of a giant pile of crap I would feel like, because I literally couldn't, like, just standing up it's probably some of the worst back pain I've ever had in my life. My back went out when I was 26, when I was still working for Bob Cramer, and that was pretty bad. And that was basically like 10 years ago. And this is worse than that. By the end of the day, both my father-in-law and my mother-in-law have had, well, my father-in-law especially, he had both hips replaced. He had both knees replaced as quickly as possible after that.
But you know, and that's not genetic. That's not genetic. That's your in-laws. Come on.
No. I'm getting to it. And then my mother-in-law had a knee replacement. And so they had a walker on hand, just in the house, because that's what happens. I literally I could not stand up and walk around without a walker by the end of the day on 4th of July. Oh. I took that fucking thing home and I needed it the next morning. Slowly over the rest of the day, I was able to kind of start getting around without it, but it was completely debilitating. Like, I couldn't sit down. I couldn't stand up. I couldn't lay down. I was in constant pain. And there was no comfortable position.
Have you still had this crazy heat to deal with at the same time?
It hasn't been as bad. I think the hottest it got was like mid-80s a few days ago. And today it's starting to warm up, but it's not going to be anything crazy. So that's what I've been dealing with, like, basically since a day after or a couple days after we did our last recording. And the worst part was that it happened. I mean, that it happened at all, but it happened just after we did our Sunday morning routine. Is after breakfast we go through and clean up the whole house. We clean the bathrooms, all the floors, all the bed, and like just clean out the whole house, you know, our once away kind of, that's what normal humans do. And it went out like literally 20 minutes after we got done cleaning. I was like, fuck. But
so what are you gonna do?
But so it still is giving me, it's definitely not as bad. It's kind of like light pain, but I have a chiropractor I'm going to go to. I actually got to go back and reread that book, that TMS book by a doctor, I can't remember his name, Jeff, that you
Sarno,
referred me to.
Dr. Sarno.
Sarno. Go back and re-up on some of that information. But I've basically just been sitting around like a pile of crap. Or at least I feel like a pile of crap. It sucks. And it sucks feeling not very helpful and also or like a burden on anybody else around. And I don't know. What's frustrating is, like, as we know, like, this just happened to me. Like, it feels like only a couple or 3 months ago my back freaked out on me and I wasn't able to really do much around the shop for like a week and a half. And that same thing has basically kind of happened now. I haven't really been doing any work. I did my taxes. I did my quarterly taxes, getting like administrative stuff done, but I can't actually work. Even just like getting up in the morning is pretty agonizing. And then it, like, once I get up and start moving, it starts warming up a little bit. But I honestly, like, I got to count my blessings because I know people who've had it way worse. I know Quentin, our homie right here, has. I think actually younger than me, but it was pretty scary. This is the worst that I've ever experienced. I was like, shit, I don't know. Like, it was so bad, I was starting to was going to be able to like walk properly again, like, honestly.
Oh, jeez.
Pretty scary. Oof. I was like, yeah. What do I do if I can't stand at a grinder? I mean, I guess I could sit at a grinder, but
sit down.
I'm like, yeah, exactly. I'm like, what the hell do I do? So that's been my week.
Jeez.
Taxes and a broken back.
I feel for you, man. You got to see a chiropractor. You got to sort it out. It can't be ongoing.
Yeah, jeez. You got to sort it out.
Oof.
Whatever it takes. Maybe a sports medicine guy. You know, something. Got to do something. I tell you what, though, in regards to people doing stuff, you know, when things are bad, I got pictures of from Uri Hoffe. They cut his leg off. He finished a hammer for me right before they cut his leg off. And they cut his leg off. She's got a chair next to the power hammer. It said, "Move your anvil right up on it." He's in a chair like this. He's got the hammer here. He's got the power hammer here. He's got the forge here. They roll him right there, and he just turns, uses the power hammer, swivels over to the right to the anvil. They take all his leg. You don't give a shit. He says, "I don't hold a hammer in my foot."
Jeez.
Where there's a will, there's a way.
Whatever it takes.
But all getting old, and I think fuck, that's what that means. But all getting very old.
Honestly, that's what I'm having a hard time realizing is, like, I still have kind of like a mentality like I'm 26 years old still. 25, 26 years old. I used to do all kinds of stupid shit, but the reality is that I'm not 20. I'm 36 going on 37 in just a few weeks. And it gets harder as you get older to keep your body up, and you gotta it's not an afterthought anymore. I have to actually be more conscientious about how I treat my body, what I'm putting into my body, how I'm taking care of it, because if I'm gonna have any hope of continuing to make knives for even in like 20-30 years, which I hope I do, I really gotta make some serious changes.
Well, I definitely understand that, man. I had two back surgeries, and I had one in 2007 and 2018. So I definitely understand that. I used to get blazed 12 hours working on a grinder and just not even think about it. But now I really have to think about or plan out my day, because I can't stand at a grinder or forge all day long.
Mm-hmm. What happened that you had such back pain?
So what it is, on my spinal cord is called a tethered spinal cord, and it's all the way at the L5 S1, and it got stuck on my vertebrae, and it stretched and stretched while I grew, and I have nerve damage in my right leg. People say I have the coolest walk ever, but no, that's not a cool walk, that's a limp. So like some of y'all have seen me at blade shows, and you see me walking with a stick, or
yeah,
I really need it because I have a weak leg.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. Gosh. Miracle. You're gonna get better. You're young. You're strong. You're gonna get better. You just need to see the right people. That's all it is. Surely, you see the right people.
Yeah. Yeah. I think so. And like I said, like when my back went out, like I said, when I was 26. I have a friend who is actually a chiropractor that I was seeing in town, and I think it's time to kind of make that more of a regular part of my life again, because I've kind of gotten away from seeing and keeping up with body physically in that way, and it really made a huge difference and helped me with recovery when it went out, you know, all those years ago.
Hmm. Let's hope it all works out.
Yeah. That's Jeffrey. Live enough this conversation, man. Come on.
Yeah, I know. Let's go to the oldest man in the group here. Jeff, your week. What's been going on?
And probably the fastest PS. All your asses in a running race.
How was Bridge Club this week?
Bridge Club? Yeah, Bridge Club. London Bridge Club. It was great. I'm getting all this stuff ready to go, and I had a great week. It was real busy. 4th of July was a lot of fun for everyone except for my dogs. My dogs went out of. I had to like hang out with one of them for a while. The fireworks are never good around animals. I don't know what happened. Last year was okay, and then this year it's a disaster. And then I got a lot of work done. And I'm getting ready to go on vacation, and then of course we have this torrential rain. Which, you know, we started to get a leak in our roof, and I'm trying to get a roof guy to come in before we leave, and that's the stress now. We weren't going anywhere, you know. It'd be like, okay, well then let's get the roof guy, but now it's like we gotta get the roof guy before we leave, and that's kind of not thrilling. And then. My business partner Tony came up for yesterday. We had a good time. We're working on a book for the company, and it was a lot of fun talking about that. We're gonna go have some dinner next week and kind of like do a little bit more. He's a chef, and we're gonna kind of like put a lot of recipes in it, and he's worked on a lot of cookbooks too. So we're just kind of going over what that was gonna be, and I'm doing a lot of watercolors at night, and. Podcasting during the day apparently, and then yeah, so it's good. Cool. But I'm very optimistic.
And there was your razor holder that you did this week as well, that I just saw within the last hour. That looks pretty cool.
We talked about this a couple months ago. I was talking about like, you know, we need to, you know, blacksmiths in general, it's like we can't just make bottle openers. There's got to be something a little bit more kind of cutting edge, not cutting edge, but like, I just thought there's just got to be a way to make something that holds a razor knife, a razor blade. And I was finishing up gluing up a pile of knives, and then it just dawned on me in regards to how I make my friction folders. I use angles, and then I thought, why don't I use an angle on the inside of the angle handle? And then I put in a pin, and well, it's right here. I mean, you can't see it on the podcast, but it's basically, you know, two angles, an angle and an angle, and then it closes down on the pin that holds the razor in. And nice. It was just kind of a nice, it was a fun little project. It was really like, it came at me 3 hours ago, 4 hours ago, and I finished gluing up, and I was getting ready to go. I got somewhere to go tomorrow, and then I was just like,
you got a couple hours. I think you can figure it out. And I figured it out, and it was a eureka
million dollar idea.
I mean, not really. I mean, like, you know.
I don't know. That's pretty sweet. That's a pretty sweet razor knife, honestly.
I think it's
pretty fucking rad.
I appreciate it. No, this was like, this was, for me, it was like a eureka moment because I only use razor knives. I don't use any other fucking knives in the shop. I mean, it's all like razor blades. And I have razor hold box cutter holders all over the place. And if I could not have to sharpen, or if I could not have to heat treat, or if I could not have to glue stuff up, this is like nirvana. This is like, you know, finding the holy grail of, you know, the everlasting, you know, never sharpened, forged, you know, knife maker knife. You know,
so is this a one off, or is this going to be?
I'm not planning on selling folders for a long time. I do friction folders. I'm going to be doing classes and stuff. But at the same time, it's like, there's so much, as we're going to talk to Quentin about, there's so much things that go on in the moving parts and especially with the forge stuff, that like, there's just too much. There's too much that can go wrong over time. And I just for sure don't not want to get the calls like, hey man, this thing is kind of like getting loose at this one spot. I don't want those calls. So this is going to be like, at the very least, I might do a couple more. And then at some point I could see myself doing a class because, you know, no heat treatment, bingo, bango, bongo. And, you know, it was fun to do. I definitely want to do more for sure. And that's
nice. Nice. Okay, cool. So whilst we're talking about folders, I mentioned maybe the week or so before, I mentioned about putting an order in for some brass, and I was hoping that it came out well.
Oh no.
Fuck. Yes. So I paid a fortune for a bunch of brass that was laser cut. And it's all wrong. So I had a delivery of these brass scales, which are going to be for my folder. And All wrong. So they need to do them all again. And it's not so much they're expensive. You know, there's no getting away from that. But it's not so much the money. It's the time. Everything is so slow here. These took months to get to me. And now I'm going to be waiting a while again. So I think there's a way around it so we don't have to wait those months. But it's just like a ball ache. It's just like, you know, everything was planned, you know, to perfection. And these things arrived and they're not quite right.
So what happened?
So there's two. I tell you what, I will show you. I haven't shown these yet, but this is the brass sort of penknife.
Yeah, girl.
So basically, what happens is there's this like an inner frame, if you like, and they have all the holes in for the to attach to the little sort of spring on the back and to hold the blade in, that kind of thing, and that one has a hole in the middle, which is there, which then helps when you attach the main scales. So they've duplicated that same DXF file, which is the file that they need for the laser cutting, into the final scales as well. So they've all got this bloody hole in the middle. Their thing is, well, it's brass. You can stick a brass pin in there and buff it out. And it's just like, well, there's extra work involved. And, you know, I shouldn't have to do that. So it's just a real pain in the ass. So, yeah.
So what happened? The guy running the thing was saying, how many of these do I have to make?
Exactly.
And then one guy says, it's the same. It's both of them the same. So just run the same one.
Exactly.
How many holes do I do? Do them all. Do all of them.
That's exactly what they've done.
Oh my God.
So I've been sent this big box of like 6mm brass, which isn't cheap, for, you know, a few hundred knives, and they're all wrong. They're all wrong.
Oh wow.
So I mean, this is one which I knew was wrong, which I've had in my pocket for the last sort of 5-6 months. You know, just testing it. But, you know, the final designs that went off didn't have this hole. But they didn't change the file over when they did the laser cutting. And so that was 2 days of just trying to get things sorted and, you know, trying to make sure I didn't lose all this money, all that kind of thing, which was a real pain. We did have some... Now, Matthew Angels just said in the chat there, they literally said it would buff out. That's exactly what they said. They said, put a pin in, it'll buff out. And, you know, I did, and I've tried a few, and it does buff out. You can't see it, but I know it's there, and it's just the extra work that I did, you know, I hadn't planned on. So, yeah, it's a real pain. But aside from that, I haven't got it with me. When we have a chat later, when somebody asks you to chat, I'm going to pop out and get it. So I've worked with a factory back in the UK and on a new sort of sustainable kind of material that I can use for handles. And we've been going back and forth for a few months now when we've had a few sort of samples and they haven't been quite right. And we're finally happy with something. And it's made of hemp. So they're using hemp. They're using bioresins that then come from sugarcane too. So it's a completely natural product. It looks like a hardwood. It feels like a hardwood. It machines like a hardwood. But hemp is just like amazing stuff. It grows faster than any other crop in the world. It actually helps heal the soil that they use to grow it in so they can put other crops in. It's like the most sustainable product in the whole world. It's amazing stuff. So yeah, so I've worked with this factory to make these sheets of hemp, which I can use for handle materials, which are pretty cool. So they'll be coming on a range of chef knives coming in the future. But yeah, I've got the final samples, which I'm very happy with. I haven't got them with me here now, but they're out in another room. So when we get Quentin, I'm gonna pop out and I can show you what they look like. They're pretty cool.
When you mentioned the hemp, the Cypress Hill song jumped into my head.
Which one?
Son of a preacher man playing in the ground.
You know, when you say hemp, everybody immediately thinks marijuana, but it's not at all.
I mean, same family.
It's same family, but yeah, you can't get high from hemp. But it does smell incredible. Weirdly, it does smell of like licorice or like tobacco. It's got that sort of smell to it too. Super grippy. I'll get some and I'll bring it in just a sec. But it's
Greg, really you cool puff stuff. The chewer?
I don't. Never have done.
Look at that little grin on his face. Wait, because they don't have any weed in the UK. That's why. That's why he's got that. You got the cordial.
They have plenty in France. They have plenty here in France. But no, never have. Never have. What else? So you mentioned off the topic of knives. We mentioned playing in a band. I mentioned last week. A lot has happened, so I can't quite remember how I left it on the show, whether I was joining a band or whether I was starting a band. Because my wife told me, if you join a band, you're going to hate it because they won't be doing what you want to do. So I started a band and we got a bunch of us together this week and we had our first sort of rehearsal. And it was the best thing ever. It was incredible. So there was just three of us. It was myself as a guitarist. We had a drummer and we had a bass player. We went in with no sort of preconceived ideas of what we're going to do, and we left with two fully rehearsed songs that were, you know, we nailed. It was tight. It was awesome. So yeah, we basically formed a band out of nothing, and it's awesome. So yeah,
what's the name of the band? You gotta take video next time.
I did take video, but we're not brave enough to show. Nobody's gonna show
it on here right now.
Their first rehearsal. Now come on. But we do have a name. We're called the Uplifts.
Okay, I like that.
It's all sort of uplifting, sort of 90s melodic.
It's pretty on the nose there, Craig.
Yeah.
Yeah, you don't have to explain that.
It's pretty cool stuff. So yeah, that's us anyway. So that was my week. So it's been. Yeah, it's been a good one. And today, then, so we're doing this an hour later today because the bar, we live in this very small village here, but the bar has been closed for a long time. After COVID and so on, the owners left and they said, you know, we'd never be able to open again. But there's new owners and they've opened today. So the whole village were out today up in the main sort of village square and everybody's been drinking and so on. So hence being an hour later today. But it's been a good week. It's been a very good week.
Is that why you're a little rosy in the cheeks?
Why I'm only drinking cranberry juice now because I've had enough. Yeah.
Everybody's been sucking on that hemp knife.
I've had enough. So I've mentioned my folder, and we've got a guest today who is also working on our folder. But I'll leave it to Quentin to tell us exactly what he's been doing this week. He's had a pretty busy week.
Yes, I had a very busy week. I've been posting like crazy, like I never posted before. that's been a headache because my wife hates social media. So trying to convince her, like, let me get on social media. But anyway, but since everybody's showing and telling, my folder So it's a little bit different than everybody else. When it's a, it's generated for the kitchen, because I make chef knives, of course. And my knives, this one is made from S35V and titanium. So a lot of the so-called folding chef knives, there are utility knives trying to be kitchen knives. And this is a kitchen knife that's a folding knife. And what I mean by that, this is about 2 inches wide versus some of them that's about an inch and a quarter wide. So they're more utility knives. So this one gives you the heel height. So when you're pinch gripping on it, and you can rock with it or pinch grip it back this way. So it elongates the knife and it just feels right.
Cool. So, Go on, Jeff.
I was going to say, so basically now you're running your second Kickstarter. You did a Kickstarter a number of years ago. It was very successful. So
yes.
Now you're running this Kickstarter for the Ona knife. It's called the Ona knife. Mm-hmm. And you're so far, it's, I know we talked about it on the 5th. I mean, you are halfway to your goal.
Yeah.
Under a week. And it's like and it's been amazing. And it's such a great everything about it is great, and we're all pushing for you. And you know, we also want to help, you know, make sure that you reach your goal, because, like, you know, you are one of these people that you root for. You have to root for Quentin Middleton because he's just like great guy, awesome knife maker. I have one of your knives. I use it all the time. I love it. And I think that this is one of those things that it's great. Well, let's just talk about so where did the name Ona come from?
So the Ona, it came from, I did a DNA test, and I kind of traced my lineage in Nigeria.
And you're related to Ona Kagla. After all this time, you've just found that.
Right, we got you. We got you. You didn't have to die in every film. Get out of here.
I wish. But so this one, in Yoruba, the dialect, it means fire. So it's a camp knife, so you're cooking with fire, you're camping, you're going to be in front of a fire, or if you're fishing, you're going to have to cook your fish on fire. So it just kind of, it ties in, you know what I mean? But also put my own little spin to it instead of just calling it fire.
Yeah. That's awesome. It's amazing. I one of the things is, you know, about you having this connection with your family and your connection with your heritage. And I think it's so great that you're doing that. It's awesome.
Thank you, man.
Well, and you and I were actually talking the other day. We did a live stream, and one of the things you brought up, which I thought was really cool, is that part of your goal with running this Kickstarter is to kind of tool out so you can start kind of developing kind of I don't know if a factory is the right word, but trying to work to help create jobs for your own community right there.
Yeah. From day one, even from my Kickstarter back in 2014, it was to generate enough funds where I can build a brand, and also get machinery to employ people from my community, because I live in a very small community. There's only one traffic light, maybe nothing here, but farmland. And a lot of people don't have jobs. They're just walking around doing nothing. And who am I? I just want to kind of breathe life back into my community. I'm kind of thinking about Ford and Dodge, BMW, all these people that created these big Fortune 500 companies had to start in somebody's garage. So why can't it start with me?
Right. Do you know what that reminds me of? A friend of mine, he lives in a place called Cardigan in West Wales. Again, tiny, tiny village, the middle of nowhere, but it's actually right on the coast. But there's nothing around them at all. And David Hyatt, he set up a jeans manufacturing company. They make jeans, handmade jeans. But he bought the old, I think it was Lee Jeans. Remember, I don't remember Lee Jeans. They had a factory there and employed everybody in the surrounding area. Eventually got to the point where they were then like outsourced in China, and everybody lost their jobs. And this was like in the 70s. So he moved to this area, and there was, like you said, there's just decimated. Nobody was working there, and they had this big factory, but they had all these people, and he called them grandmasters because they'd done sort of 30 years of making jeans, but there was no jobs for them. So his whole goal is with Hired Denim is to get these 400 people their jobs back. You know, people in the village, and that's his whole sort of marketing spiel as well. You know, we want to make the world's best jeans, but the main thing is I want to get everybody a job within the village. You know,
yeah.
And that sort of reminds me of that sort of ethos. It's pretty cool. It's really cool.
It's not about making money. Of course, funds are going to come, but it's just I'm trying to create a legacy. You know what I mean? It's something that's beyond me, where somebody can get inspired by doing, kind of following my footsteps and trying to make the world a better place, really. Because I have this motto, especially like when I mentor or minister to someone, I have the saying, each one lift one. Because everybody thinks about this. Everybody trying to think about, oh, I need to save the world. I need to reach the masses. Instead of you just trying to reach that one person. Then that person you reached out to, that person can reach another and another and another. And it just started off with just that one. So each one lift one.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah. And I think it's, you know, it's really admirable what you're doing because, like you said, these big, big companies, they always start with that one sort of maverick who's going to say, look, I'm going to change things for the people around me and to help what's local, and whether that's like a family business or whatever it may be. And there are some like family businesses, I think, within our industry, who've then gone on to sort of dominate what they do. And I'll tell you one of them.
Knife Talk is sponsored by Evenheat, the manufacturers of the finest heat treat ovens available. To find your next oven, go to evenheat-kiln.com.
And you know what? You can get an Evenheat, which is made by one of the best family-owned businesses in the industry. You can get one of them by going to saltceramics.com and using them to supply, because they're distributors of Evenheats. You can specify the Evenheat that you want, order it via them. If you use knifetalk.net/heat, it'll automatically apply a discount, so you'll get $75 off the actual unit, but you'll also get free shipping in the US as well. So, yeah. Salt Ceramics is the distributor, but get that discount by going to knifetalk.net/heat. There we go.
I like that voice. Evenheat.com.
Oh, that's our guy. Don't tell Brian. Brian's head is big enough. He doesn't need to hear things like this. He really doesn't. So, Quenda, can you just show us the knife again? Sorry, if you don't mind. Can you just give us some sort of information on how people can back you, where they go, and all that kind of stuff?
So, if you follow me on Middleton Made Knives on my Instagram page, you can click my bio link, and that goes straight to the Kickstarter, or you can go on Kickstarter.com. And type in ONA, and my campaign will come up. And basically, I got my calipers and everything, kind of, because people have been asking, like, what's the measurements? And so, Jesus, it's hard to do that on this camera, man.
Don't worry about the people watching. Think about the people listening. Don't worry about them.
So, but anyway, it's about 2 inches wide, man.
So she said.
A 5-inch. I'm not gonna go there.
You have no choice. You're in this with all of us.
So this is about a 5-inch blade, and the handle is about 5 1/4 inch long. So it's a great utility knife. So I think it's an opportunity to change the game a little bit.
You decided the handle's titanium. What made you go with that as the handle?
So the reason why I wanted to do titanium, because it's easy to customize later on, so I can anodize it, laser engrave it. So there's the canvas is there, and also titanium is very light and very strong, and it's easy to maintain. So that's the reason why I went with titanium instead of G10 or my Carter or anything like that.
And you just did a giveaway with one of your knives, didn't you, today?
Yeah, man. I announced it this morning. So it was another knife maker from Ireland or something. And he won it, and the knife is over there. But anyway, I'm doing another one next week. So this one's going to be pretty cool, too.
Oh,
So that's what I mean by it's a platform for so many.
All right, the engraving
artwork. Yeah, so it's a empty canvas to do anything. So this is the base model. This would be the base model, and then it branches off to customizable down the road.
Finishes and that kind of
thing. Correct.
Mm-hmm. Cool. Okay, well, Quentin, I'm not sure if you listen to the show every week, but what we like to do is this little section we call...
Hey, man, can I ask you a question?
So people will DM us questions, or if you're here live in the chat, you can also ask the questions as well, and we'll put them straight into the show. But if you've DM'd a question this week, we'll try and get to it. But if you do have a question...
Contact us via DM at Knife Talk Podcast on Instagram. It's that easy.
That easy. Mareko, would you like to give the first question for us?
Yeah, I'll kick it off with Nice Handmade Knives. He says, hey dudes, loving the show. I'm a novice / hobbyist knife maker. I'm originally focused on small batch releases via newsletter. Luckily, I've gotten an order list of customs. Unfortunately, though, while having a full-time job and a backlog of custom orders, I've fallen very behind on releasing any knives on my to my subscribers. How would you suggest managing the situation? My fear is losing traction with those who have signed up, but haven't seen any new releases in a while.
I can answer that one for you.
Yeah, here we go. We got an expert on the case. Here we go.
So what he did was he bit off more than he can chew at first. He tried to get more, and then he can't sustain himself. So now he's backlogged, and then no one is seeing his work or trying to put out new content. So he needs to find this happy medium where he can produce and then produce a little bit more to show your new clients to bring on. So sometimes my grandparents used to say, you're long-eyed. So you're trying to go beyond what you're seeing.
Sounds like you're talking about me right now.
I think it's a good thing that you're using newsletters.
No, I mean, it's a good advice for sure.
Yeah. And the fact that you're using newsletters and you're selling by your newsletters, that's great because I think that, for me, I find that the biggest return on any sort of time that I invest in any sort of marketing, I find newsletters are by far the best. Because these people have already shown an interest and they, you know. But yeah, I'm in exactly the same boat where, you know, I have put a newsletter out and I say, yeah, every Friday I'm going to make a knife available. And it comes to Friday and I haven't got any available. So it's difficult. And I suppose this is advice for myself as much as anybody else's. But there's always content, I suppose, when you're making stuff during the week. These people who are interested in your knives, they probably would be interested in, you know, hearing more about the making of it or something. You know, they don't necessarily just need to know you've got a knife available, but, you know, maybe it's just sharing some processes, that kind of thing. And that's something that I'm very guilty of, that I don't do myself, because, you know, again, time is the big thing. As I'm sure we're all we're all aware of, time is the biggest suck for us all. But I don't know. I think you're doing a good thing. Your newsletters, they seem to be doing the job for you. So it's not a bad problem to have. Not a bad problem at all.
Quentin is right. This guy's his eyes are bigger than his stomach. And I've gone through this because, you know, some of people don't mind waiting. I've recently, I'm almost completely caught up with all my custom orders, and we're holding back in terms of putting out all sorts of new stuff until I'm completely finished and I want to start making stuff and selling it direct. Because the problem is, as unfortunately as it is, people are just used to that Amazon buy it now shit.
Yeah.
And if you look at people like, I mean, what Josh Smith is doing right now, it's like Montana Knife Company is like unreal. He's making knives and he's getting people prepared, and then they're all, hundreds of them are sold within 4 minutes. 4 minutes. And it's like, I have one, and I'm just like, I hit the lottery at some point. You know, it was just like, I couldn't believe it. I started sending him messages like, yo, how did they all sell in 4 minutes? He's just like, I don't know, man. He got people fired up, and there is something to that. And I think that Quentin especially is one of these people who he has. I know you do custom orders, but you always have
stock available. That's the only reason why I was able to get one of your knives, to be honest with you. And I think that's one of the things that is very admirable, because I want to be able to have stuff available. And, you know, it just, I had to stop a lot of little things and then hopefully catch up.
Yeah.
We've got a question in the chat. Maybe we can go back to that in just a sec if you like. But Tim Brown is on YouTube. He's asked the question. He's watching us live at the moment. Hey, Matt, can I ask you a question? What is your opinion on approaching retailers like Blade Gallery and African Custom Knives to be a retail outlet for a maker? I don't go with any retailers, but I know Mareko, you do. Any tips for approaching retailers?
I don't currently, but I have in the past. You just start a conversation. Maybe you interact with them on their Instagram. Maybe you call and talk to them directly. I know that retailers, all retailers kind of have to be careful, because they're kind of curators in a way, almost like gallerists for around knives. And so they're trying to make sure that what they're putting out there is actually, you know, quality work that they also know is going to sell, because it doesn't benefit either them or the maker for it to just sit there on a website or in a store or anything like that. But I think you just start talking to them, and if, you know, go into the conversation expecting a no, and if they do say no, be ready to ask why, and be open to the opportunity to learn as to what is the reason why, what can you make changes, or how and where can you make changes that would help them, I guess, feel more interested in buying your work. But at the same time, we live in the world of the internet, I don't know if you heard of this thing, where we can literally connect with millions of people, potentially millions of people around the world. And that kind of responsibility then kind of falls back on you about just starting small. And like, there's nothing wrong. I was actually talking with a friend today, and there's nothing wrong with starting out being completely unknown. And there's something about having that community like build up around you and have this kind of like grassroots spread of word of your work, and you know, financially maybe it doesn't feel very good in the start, but in the long run your chances of having a brand and a company that's going to be able to make it the long haul are much higher if you go at it kind of like the slow and steady way. I think
I've got a question regarding retailers, actually, because I've never really been with a retailer. There's a local shop that will sometimes, you know, sort of sell my stuff, but a very sort of small percentage. So I'm wondering what would a retailer normally ask for with regards to sort of percentage.
So I've dealt with maybe about 5 to 6 to 7 retailers in the past. I cut down to 2. So normally, they would like to have for about 40%, truthfully. Yes, I know. so they're trying to make money, of course. So they don't want to go on your side if you're trying to do 20% of retail value. So like a middle ground is between 30 to 35%. That's a really good win-win for everybody. But also for the person that was asked the question, if you're new, I say this to a lot of new knife makers: sacrifice now so you don't have to sacrifice later. And what I mean by that is give away knives. So if you're trying to get your brand out there, you're trying to get known by your knives, these retailers, give them a knife and let them try it out and see if they love it. And then basically you sacrifice the knife now so you don't have to sacrifice a knife 5 years down the line trying to build your brand, because you already gave a retailer or retailers some knives and they love your product and they're selling it. So now you created your brand within that community.
Gotcha.
You also, Quinn, you also go to a lot of, I know that you're in a lot of stores. I know that you also do a lot of events at stores, kind of like you'll set up a table and then you'll get people to come. You're very good at that, being involved with retailers. I know that you're a JB Prince. Talked to Tim Music and you mentioned your name and stuff like that. And it's I would imagine people like, you know, you do the best job because you actually show up to these places and help promote them. Because otherwise, you can't count on a lot of these people. I have a knife still with this retailer that went out of business. The family got divorced, and like I'm like in limbo in regards to where this little paring knife went. But at the same time, it's like the fact that you show up and you do events. Mareko, you do the same thing. You do, you know, you go and do events. And I know you did something with JB Prince a few years ago. Being able to be visible and kind of bring people in is a lot better than like hoping that these guys are going to help move your stuff too.
It's good to educate people or educate them about your brand. I said this on Mareko's Live. I have two rules in knife sales, sex sales and performance sales. So and that's my rule, because sex sales, that means if it looks good, that's going to draw people to the table. And that's what I do in events. Like, I make my knife look pretty, but also it needs to perform well. Performance tells. So it needs to perform the way that I say it's going to do. If it says it's going to cut a car in half or chop a tree in half, it needs to do that because that's what I said it's going to do.
Well, that's what Craig is doing now. He's putting weed in his knives. And he's going to have a set
exactly.
And he's going to be able to move some knives.
Exactly. Like, this is going to take it to the next level, man. I'm telling you.
Trust me, now it's drug sell. Perfect.
Drugs and knives is what the kids are into. We've had a message on YouTube from Matt the Wangle. 7 years before I retired from my day job. My goal is the slow burn Mareko has talked about in the past. 7 years till retirement. That's living the dream. Seven years. Wowzers. Jeff, would you like to take the next question, please?
Absolutely. The Blade Maker asks, what's the best way to grind knife tips to make them super fine for preparing onions before dicing, where you cut these 75% of the cuts after the knife is chopped in half? I'm referring to kitchen knives, of course. How do you grind the tips to make them on the thin side?
Mareko, let's start with you. Yes, anybody. Let's start with you.
I got a really thin tip.
Get stuck between the teeth.
Jeez.
The key for me is to keep it cold with the water bucket, because it's a small it's a very small area. It's easy to overheat because there's a lot of friction happening when you're grinding out of the tip, and it's really easy to overheat it from the grinder. Something I've seen other makers do in the past, which I don't think is a bad move, honestly. The first person I ever saw do this was actually Don Nguyen, and we're going to talk about Don Nguyen's tip right now. And what he does, he cuts his blades out with a little extra mass out at the tip, so it doesn't come to a fine point. It eventually will, but it keeps it bulky out at the tip, one, for control, but two, so that it has that mass, that thermal mass, so it doesn't overheat as easily. But he also does the same thing where he's just grinding, dipping to keep it cool. And then he goes back and cleans off, and, you know, forms the tip and cleans it up that way. I think the key for me mostly is just to keep it cold and wet.
Man. Too many jokes. I'm shaking here. Too many jokes.
I think that's the obvious one.
Keeping it yeah, cool. And a good way to do that is by dipping it, keeping it wet. But also fresh belts. Always use fresh belts, because if you're trying to use an old belt, it's going to generate so much more heat. And we can help you there. If you want to get amazing belts with a bit of a discount.
Combat Abrasives makes the world's best abrasive belts for knife makers. Available in any size at unbelievable prices. Go take a look at combatabrasives.com and get 15% off with promo code KNIFETALK15. Do it now.
15% off. But I know they're a sponsor, but that's always the best way. If you're using old belts and you're trying to keep the heat down, it's going to be difficult. So make sure you've always got fresh belts in stock, you know, and Combat Abrasives is the best place to get them. Jeff, how are you keeping your tip cool in this weather?
Don't worry about my tip.
Quentin, you're interrupting Quentin with your disgustingness. Quentin, you were going to say something about that last question?
Yeah, so most people, when they're grinding, and if you're on a flat platen, most people, they do a continuous pull. What I do is stop midway instead of trying to press it in and trying to create that complete pass. I stop midway on my flat platen and then take it off, then dip, because I'm not generating that friction along the flat platen to create that heat if I already have my knife fully profiled. So that helps me.
Yeah, makes sense. Sorry, Jeff. Did you have any tips on the tip? I'm gonna press you on this.
I do use the disc grinder for that. I like to kind of like fine tune everything that part of the knife. I'm not gonna fall for your
banana. You prefer a circular motion for your tip.
I'm not falling for your banana tailpipe bullshit. I'm gonna
to the right or to the left?
How dare you, sir? It's forward or reverse. I can't remember. I'm one of the two. And I use the disc grinder kind of slow with and then I'm able to kind of like feather in the thinner part of that knife. I ain't gonna fall for your bullshit. And I keep it cool and I'll develop so much heat. I actually have a question just came in that I think is really good. It's gonna be good for you too, Craig. Matt Vogt says, "Hey, what's up, guys? I recently made a stainless knife for a customer, and he sent me pictures on Sunday. He had an employee that thought it would be funny to hide his knife from him. So he hid it on top of their commercial convection oven where everything vents. The knife was in 500-degree heat for up to 7 hours.
Oh,
the steel is Damasteel. RWL34, and I think it was cryoed before the temper. And I did the cryo before the temper. It hasn't been sent me the knife for me to check it. But from what I was wondering is if you guys thought that it would have messed up the temper, and is it ruined? And if you were wondering, the employee was fired. He did send some pictures, and the handle is fucking chewed up. Oh, it was sitting on top of this 500-degree oven. I mean, if that's not the biggest asshole thing you do to an employee, I don't know, to a coworker, I don't know what is. Quentin, you've used Damasteel before. I know that we all have our opinions. What do you think? You think the knife is still, you know, is it ruined? Is the temper ruined at 500 degrees?
Depending on it, the Rockwell hardness that he has already, but yeah, it's ruined. It's a beater knife now. Like it's so. This one is that you're gonna pry hot dog with, knife. So I like this is a screwdriver now. So sorry.
Yeah, I mean, I assume he's talking 500 degrees Fahrenheit.
Yeah, Fahrenheit,
not Celsius. Yeah. Which is, I suppose, you're probably looking at a sort of 420 for as a temper temperature anyway. So yeah, it's way above that. So it's gonna screw with the hardness. But we've been doing this thing with Damasteel where each week we find a Damasteel knife, which is like the knife of the week, as we're calling it. So if you're making a knife and you're using Damasteel, first of all, well done, because it's great, great stuff. But if you tag us and Damasteel, we'll pick one each week. And we'll bring it up and we'll have a look. But this particular one, the person who made it, we've actually talked about before in the past. So if you're watching the live video, you'll see it now. And it's from Edward R. Knives. It's a folder. I thought it would be appropriate to talk about a folder today because we've got Quentin on and I've briefly shown my folder as well. So it's a beautiful knife, but it's using the new pattern, which is Fafnir, which we had a pair on a few weeks ago to launch these new patterns. Fantastic blade. That pattern's amazing. It's a lovely handle as well. I think it's a Koa handle. Edward R. Knives. It's another beauty. So again, thank you, Ed, for showing us this knife. It's something special. It really is nice.
Save big on brunch for mom, all in the Kroger app. Get 16-ounce packs of flavorful Angus 90% lean ground sirloin for $4.99 each with a digital coupon. Then buy two, get two free on 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger, less than 5 miles away. Or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
And Quentin won the Damasteel Paring Knife Award at the Damasteel Invitational.
Yeah.
We were talking to him. So here's the question for you, Quentin. Will you be making some Onas out of Damasteel?
There's a possibility.
We all know that. That's not much of a poker face, that is.
No.
Yes, he's going to make
some.
That'll be sweet.
Awesome. So whilst, again, we're going to go back to your knife multiple times, I'm sure, in this episode. Where are we in your current campaign? Because you have a goal to get to. I know you've had a fantastic first few days, and yes, you know, you're really getting up there. How close are we? You know, what can we do to help? What needs to be done?
So right now I am 60%.
Wow.
There, like within about 5 to 6 days, and that's, it blew my mind, because my first Kickstarter, it took 30 days to get 35K, and I'm way surpassed that right now. I'm double that now. So I'm honored. I'm shocked that people would just buy my stuff, man. It's an honor. It's humbling at the same time.
Well, the most important thing is we have to keep the heat on. The heat stays on until you get that money. So we can't count our chickens. We're going to be making sure we're going to do a big, at the end, I have something I want to tell our listeners that they must do. As well as knife makers, we talk about a community, and we talk about being helpful to each other. If this isn't the most helpful thing you can do, I don't know what is. Quentin is nothing other than a gentleman and deserves our help. So anything we can do to help you, we're going to do it. I put it in as soon as that motherfucker started up.
I saw that. Thank you, man. I appreciate that.
All the time. I got your knife. I use your knife all the time. I got one of your beautiful knives. They're awesome. And I look up to you. So it was an easy decision. We want you to do well. That's all.
Man, thank you, man. I really appreciate that. I thank you all man.
Well,
but yeah, let's keep the fire on, man. I need to hit my goal. Come on, y'all need to help me. Come on, click the links. Do something. I'm a dance boy. Come on, this something.
Sex sells, and in a few minutes, somebody's gonna take their clothes off.
Sex sells.
Oh no, Lord have mercy. You can see it. Oh no, he's got his pants off. Oh god.
Oh no.
I'm just kidding. Let's keep going, Craig. Oh man.
Okay. He didn't really have his pants off. That was just in case.
Oh boy.
Mareka, would you like to take the next question?
I sure would. All right. Nick, this one is from Nick Knife LLC. He says, "Hey guys, love the podcast. Awesome information and super entertaining. I've been doing knives for probably about 7 months now. I'd like to think I took on to it pretty quickly, as I've been working in and running my own high-end fab and finish shop. What's the best way to gain a good following? I've been trying my best, and at times it seems like a full-time job in itself. I have the passion and drive to be successful in bladesmithing, and a better following seems to be next thing to get my work noticed. It's part-time currently,
but he's hoping to do it full-time one day. Basically, he's asking how he can get a bigger following. assuming that's going to equate to more sales, which I don't necessarily agree with. I don't think maybe it will. But I think getting a relevant following is maybe more important. Yeah. I have, since doing this show, I have a lot of followers who are knife makers. And I mean, you know, some of them, they're collectors themselves. And, you know, I've sold quite a few knives to other knife makers. But, you know, I want to be selling knives to chefs and to restaurants. So I put quite a bit big effort into making sure I follow the kind of people who I want to buy my knives, as opposed to following maybe others within the industry. So, yeah, I'd say work out who you want your customer to be. And, you know, find those communities. I mean, we've got a community here of knife makers. There's communities for everything. I mean, and, you know, chefs have a huge community. So they'll use certain hashtags or, you know. Sometimes it's simple as finding maybe a chef you'd like to work with, then finding who he's following and following those people. And, you know, it's don't necessarily think about other knife makers who you may look up to, that kind of thing, which, you know, which is great. You can use that to learn from. But, you know, getting a big following isn't the be-all and end-all. I think it's getting a relevant following for who you want your customers to be. Maybe that should be really where the focus is. Jeff, I mean, you've got a large following yourself. What do you think about, you know, how would you grow a following if you were just starting?
Well, I'll be honest with you. I had such a background in culinary stuff. I was really kind of teaming up with chefs that I worked with. I used to, Charlie Palmer was my boss and owner, my boss and mentor for quite a while. And it was one of those things where it was an easy transition. He wanted to help me, and he and I kind of did this stuff together. And I really kind of focused on not knife makers, but like people who, you know, use culinary knives. And I think that that's important. Josh Smith, talking about Josh Smith again, he deals with hunters. So he's kind of really tied into the hunting community. I know he's involved with all these organizations that are involved in these Sornex and all these places. And he's kind of found his own community that's helping kind of be, you know, advantageous to the direction that he's going. So, I mean, I think that you're exactly right. I think you need to target who your audience is.
Yeah. And another thing is don't get desperate. Remember, it's not the be-all and end-all having a big following. So, you know, tagging everybody in every post that you put up is a surefire way for them to just be really pissed off with you, and that they're not going to follow you because that, you know, it just reeks of desperation, and that, you know, it's also, you know, it's inconvenient for people as well if you're just tagging them to show you their work. It's not very polite. So yeah, don't get desperate, and I think it's the slow well thought of followers that you want. You don't want these big spikes of people who aren't relevant. You know, it's nice to have a big following, I suppose, but if they're not relevant, it's completely worthless. It's pure vanity. So don't get caught up in the vanity. Make sure these people have a sort of relevance to what you want. Mareko, you've got a huge following. What would you say to somebody just starting out looking to grow a following? What do you think?
I think... I agree with what you said earlier, Craig, that it's about developing a relevant following. That's kind of a more loyal following, and people who, I mean, honestly, like that kind of relevant and loyal following are people that you create a community with and that you take along with you on your journey. You know, honestly, you could potentially buy thousands of followers, but what good does that do for you on the business end of actually selling things? The people who are going to buy things from you actually care about you and the work that you are doing. And the biggest way to cultivate that kind of community and that culture around your work is by taking the time to, after you post, you know, say something interesting or whatever about whatever you're posting. Then when people comment, you talk with them, you engage with them, you have conversations, you develop these relationships. Yes, they are through social media. They're not like making friends in person, but it's how you build that community. And that community, you know, it's not about appealing to everybody all at once. Honestly, what you want to do is you want to develop that relationship one at a time. But if I make a relationship with Quentin's going to refer me to at least, he can probably think of at least one other person who might appreciate whatever I'm doing. And it's that kind of growth is there's more strength and I guess vibrancy for a company and their business with that kind of growth, rather than having hundreds of thousands, you know, honestly, hundreds of over 100,000 followers doesn't necessarily benefit me very well.
I was honestly probably just as good at the same spot that Jeff and Quentin are at, you know, sitting at around 25,000 followers. You don't need tons and tons of followers, even if you only have five. Like Quentin was saying earlier, like the work ultimately has to speak for itself. And with that comes reputation and respect for what you're doing and building that community in that way. In this kind of like the slow burn way we were talking about earlier, I think is the better route to go. Kevin Kelly has an article. If you look up 1000 True Fans, he's got an article called 1000 True Fans, and it looks at kind of this new economy that we're in, where we are trying to build businesses based off of a fan base. And a lot of people mistakenly think that you do need thousands and thousands and thousands or millions of followers just to make a business. But the way he breaks it down in his article is like, honestly, what you need are 1000 true fans, the people that are really, that you have strong relationships with, that you have built a community with, who've been with you as you developed and grow on your journey from making really shitty knives to making really great knives. I mean, they've been there with you. You've taken them along to be part of that. And that's powerful. And those are the people who believe in what you are, like I said before, what you are and what you're doing and the whole nature. And they're like, it's like following a sports team, honestly, it kind of in a way. And so you're kind of setting yourself up for that kind of relationship or for that kind of, I guess, strength and following. And I think that the Kevin Kelly article is a really good one. It's definitely worth I actually should go back and reread it myself, because I think it sets up the proper mindset of how to think about the number of followers. I was actually just talking to another friend earlier today, and he's like, I need more followers. And I was like, you need anybody. Just needs like a good community. They need loyal followers, not high numbers. They need quality numbers.
Yeah. And just to sort of hammer this home again, knife makers specifically seem very sort of hung up on Instagram, because that's where the community is. And, you know, again, there's communities of all sorts on Instagram. But honestly, I get far more success if you can get hold of people's email addresses and get mailing lists. They are far, far more successful. I spend so little time now on Instagram, because I know any time I spend on my mailing lists and, you know, separating different lists for different things, you get a much better, much higher return on sales by, you know, reaching out to these people who are, you know, they've shown an expression of interest already. Whereas, you know, Instagram, you know, you can put a lot of time into a post, whether, you know, you're setting photography or video or that kind of thing, and you can't even be guaranteed that all the followers are going to see these posts, let alone, you know, interact with them. So, email certainly isn't dead. For me, it's by far the better platform.
Hey Quentin, did you hear how Mareko big dogged us when he talked about his 100,000 followers and how we might be better with Quentin and Jeff's piddly 25,000 followers. We heard you, Big August.
We heard you, you
know,
man.
We heard all that. We heard all about it. Yeah,
Big August. For me, like, to answer that question, man, I was like chomping at the bits on that one. First, you got to back up, learn your craft. Like, if you're a 7 month year old, like I say, 7 month into the craft, you really don't know anything yet. So you need to learn your craft, got to learn how to grind, all these things like that. But there are some prodigies out there that's really good and just been doing it 7 months. Instead of social media, beat the pavement. Go to these restaurants, get friends with the chefs, meet the people, and then their friends will tell their friends, and it just snowballed. And truthfully, that's what I did. And these people that you're friending, they have friends on social media. They will tag you to their friends, and it was just kind of, you basically got to give time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Give time. There we go. That's the title of this week's show, I'm sure. Give time.
Jeff, you got to do this. It's got to be Give Time with Quentin Middleton. that's the name of the episode. There you go.
Time is very important to us. It's the one thing that we can't buy. But you know how you can save time and also save money? Is by using the best sandpaper in the world.
which is RhinoWet by Indasa USA. It's going to save you time. And as we all know, that's going to save you money. So we can also save you money. If you go to TexasFireSupply.com, they sell all RhinoWet in all the grits that you want, as well as a bunch of other stuff for knife makers. So head on over to TexasFireSupply.com, use KnifeTalk10, get 10% off that order, and make sure you throw some RhinoWet in your cart as well, because believe me, it's going to save you time and it's going to save you money. Ah, Mareko, would you like to give us the next question, please?
Sure. This next one is from Ryan Chris Knives. He says, stupid question. I want to start utilizing Damascus in my product. I have no problems paying for it, as I do not have the equipment necessary or currently the skill to make my own. Here is the dilemma. When I search, I either find $10 billets that I know are cheap, or it's a $169 billet. Is there a good reason for someone wanting to use Damascus but not willing to settle for the knockoff shit? Sorry for a long-winded question.
Good resource. Is there a good resource?
Oh, resource, sorry. Is there a good... Right.
Yeah. Jeff, you've got this one. We know what the answer to this one
well,
is, Jeff.
You know what? I like this question because I like the idea of making your own Damascus, but also saying to yourself, okay, let me know my limitations. And I have made Damascus and I'm still going to practice making Damascus, but I don't think that it's good enough for me to, you know, have it be a part of the arsenal of what I do. So I do buy Damascus, and I actually found Damascus. I, from this podcast, I befriended Bob Rankin, and I've been buying billets from him. And what I, you know, the thing is you want to have a relationship with the person. You know, we're small business people, and to be able to buy artisanal things or be able to buy from small businesses and to create relationships, that's kind of the move. You can buy stuff from people and say, all right, well, this is expensive and this is inexpensive. Or you can kind of create a relationship with someone like Bob's perfect. I mean, I've probably bought, I don't know how many billets I bought from him, but anytime I need Damascus, I call him up and he'll make me the size that I want. And his prices are very good. And you know, be honest with you, I'm happy to pay him what he wants because number one, I just put in the bill. But number two is like, I just did finish stock removal, the piece of his Damascus for chef knife, and there wasn't no inclusions. It's awesome. That bottle opener that I forged for you, Craig, that was from a piece. It forges real easy. You got to find someone. You got to make relationships with people, and then things work out. And in this situation, Bob Rankin is the guy I go to.
Cool. We forgot to mention earlier, if you are after Dharma Steel, if you use Knife Talk 10 on the Dharma Steel website, once you get your account, you can get 10% off Dharma Steel as well. So that could be a hell of a saving. So, but yeah, I've only heard great things from Bob Rankin. And but way before I was proficient enough to be using it, Bob sent me a billet of his Damascus as well. And yeah, beautiful, beautiful stuff. So yeah, I can only sort of second what Jeff is saying there, really.
Well, Quentin, what do you do for Damascus?
So there are three things. Like either I make it, I buy it from Damasteel, or I buy it from Chad Nichols. And you can tell by the finishes. If you go look through my Instagram page, you'll see if it's really black and naughty looking, that's mine. And then of course you can tell Damasteel and some of the Chad Nichols stuff. So that's basically. It depends on how I feel, and truthfully, I have to think about my health and how long I need to stay in front of the forge, or how long it's going to take to make this knife. So it's a lot of variables, but truthfully, I'd rather get it from Damasteel or Chad.
Cool. Okay. Jeff, do we have any hot takes for this week?
Well, actually, we do have hot takes were like all over the place. We haven't done any unsolicited advice, and I got a banger that I had that even I put it in all in bold because I couldn't not do it. So unsolicited advice is usually, you know what you should do and blah, blah, blah. So you can send them into Knife Talk on podcast on Instagram. This one is a banger from Eric Markman. Regarding the scratches in the hand finish of a knife when cutting, last week we were talking about people sometimes get scratches from paper. What he said is often the wrong sandpaper is used. The valleys in the ridge of a satin finish are too sharp
and can even be scratched or scuffed by dragging a finger across. I use some other paper for some final pulls because it leaves a smoother finish on at the same grit. So there are different sandpapers do different things. You can also use gray Scotch-Brite, but that can wash your grind lines when doing so much. So what the most important takeaway is, we were talking about, you know, some people say, oh, I get scratches from when I'm using Kydex, or I get scratches or scuffs from cutting paper. And what he's saying is your satin finish is the valleys and the peaks are too sharp. So the valleys being the lowest part of your satin finish, the dark parts, and then the peaks are the shiny parts at the top. So if you can kind of, what we were talking about last week about hitting it with the Scotch-Brite, it's going to kind of take some of that down. And then you're going to end up with more of a matte finish, which is going to mean that there's a slight matte finish, or that means there's going to be less high points for there to be scratches for or scuffs from getting caught up. I thought that was a really good thing. You guys want to, anything you want to add to that? Or
no, I agree.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm all in the gray Scotch-Brite. GA Custom Blade says, never mind.
Didn't make the cut.
Oh, you know what? You know what? You were gonna do that. I'm sorry. He said, I thought I read it said a hooker instead of looker. I thought this was gonna be rude. It says we had a looker stab the crap out of his hand yesterday. When I read that, I thought it said I had a hooker stab the crap out of the hand yesterday. But he was at a. Oh, yeah, I saw the picture. So he was at a an event and he had a table. So he says, so we had a looker stab the crap out of his can yesterday. Then he bought the knife. He had to buy the knife. He stabbed his hand with it. The plexiglass in front, so he put plexiglass in front of the knives, has helped kids and adults from reaching over and picking the knives out without permission. We were talking about if you do an event, and I know, you know, you go to events, Quentin. Do you ever have you? How do you worry about? How do you not get worried when people reach over and grab your knives?
Well, I've had a lot of mishaps. I had drunk people wave. They talk with their hand like, "Hey, I've got this knife, and oh, how does it cut?" Like, so I've had Craig, all
you've been
of that.
You've been to Quentin shows?
Oh, snap! Got you, Craig.
I was expecting a reach around joke there, but not okay. not the drunk joke. Okay.
Hookers right now.
I haven't done the plexiglass thing, but some I'm a big guy, so I'm 6'1", about 230 pounds, so I give him that look like, look at that's enough.
It's gonna work. It's definitely gonna work. Okay,
so here's some more unsolicited advice. This is from Jens. Here's some advice. Don't work with epoxy while wearing short pants. I had some epoxy smudge drip on my shoes. Unaware that this was happening, it made me almost cut my shoes off my feet at the end of the day. So pro tip, rub your feet in some sweet old Vaseline so the epoxy doesn't glue to your feet to your shoes. So Jens is telling
you not to. What a pervert. I'd say don't drip epoxy on your shoes. Don't, you know, put Vaseline on your shoes just in case. Jesus.
Yeah, that's quite a preparation. That's quite a preparation.
Vaseline. Let me brush my teeth. Let me put deodorant on. Let me Vaseline my shoes.
You got time to Vaseline your shoes up before it blew up. Some serious unsolicited advice. Celery Patch Knives says, "Hi guys, here's some unsolicited advice." Yeah, what's so funny?
Nothing. Sorry, go
on. That was a good mystery.
Hi, that's not funny. Well, no, it's fine. Hi guys, here's some unsolicited advice. If you're lucky to be in the position to build your own workshop, put in a dedicated power hammer footing. The important part is to keep the keep it isolated from the rest of the slab of your floor. This keeps the noise down considerably and reduces any vibrations in the main slab. It also prevents any cracks from forming in the main slab. My wife and I poured it ourselves. We used styrofoam to separate the slabs, and we filled it with gap filler as they cured. I have a 50-pound An Yang, and the sound level isn't too bad outside the workshop. Saying I wouldn't use one in suburbia, we're in the bush in Australia. No issues with the neighbors here. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Okay. You want to keep going with this? You want to go hot takes?
Let's do a hot take or two, and then maybe we'll talk about our hopes and dreams for the week.
For 2 weeks.
2 weeks. Aha. Yes. Yes.
So hot takes are, you know, I have to say I'm looking for nuance, ladies and germs. Hot takes aren't just like spouting things out. There should be a little bit of, like, you know, thought involved in a hot take. So like a hot take is an opinion, but use a little nuance. Some of these things, it's like serrated knives are no good. I mean, that's not really a hot take. It's just
wait a second. Jay Costa. The band name sounds like a bunch of old timers wearing orthopedic shoes.
One of them.
Oh, you bastard!
In your Reeboks.
I hope you guys write a song about stat hookers.
Oh, Jesus.
Okay, Jesus. So John Marston's hot take is: if you don't carry one of your knives daily, why would anyone else?
I mean, possibly.
Man, there's all sorts of hot takes. Go ahead.
That got me thinking about carrying knives. So I don't normally carry a knife, but the last few months I've been carrying this thing because it's, you know, testing it and so on. But this is my first folding knife, and Quentin is just, you know, he's got this big folding knife which he just released. So I've got some sort of technical questions, I suppose, about that. So I'm wondering, first of all, it took me a while to come up with what I was going to use as a pivot. So I'm wondering what pivot material you're using on your folder.
So the pivot I'm using is a stainless pivot, and where my pivot point is a little different because it's such a wide blade. Most pivots go right in the center. So yeah. Mine is way forward, so it gives me the reason why I did that so it can tuck in, so I have a better pivot point.
So yeah, that's
the reason why. But yeah, it's stainless.
Are you using any sort of bushings or any bearings or anything like that at all?
So yeah, this one is the blade is countersunk and it has bearings.
Cool,
nice. So it's a very smooth. I'm not doing it right, but it's a very smooth opening. Like, so it's very smooth. Yeah. Damn, I'm not even the camera, but yeah, it's a very smooth opening.
That's pretty cool.
That's what you say.
Jeff, before we go into our hopes and dreams, you haven't bored me with the facts and figures all about your grinder for some time. Tell me all about that grinder.
Get ready, Lockwood. I'm gonna stab you with some information. I use a Broadbeck Ironworks 2x72 grinder. I love it. It's a great grinder, and it's a grinder made by knife makers for knife makers. It goes horizontal and vertical. It comes in parts, so you build it together. The shipping, because they put it in flat rate boxes, the shipping is included in the price. And if you go to broadbeckironworks.com and put in promo code FULLBLASTKNIFETALK10, sorry about that, everybody. Knife Talk 10. I'm confused. I'm getting, it's the end of the week. I'm getting ready for vacation. I don't know what the hell podcast I'm on right now. There's you get 10% off. So Knife Talk 10 at Broadbeck Ironworks. And one of the things that I'm getting a lot of messages about is that somebody maybe they have a different grinder. All their attachments are very flexible that you could use them on your whatever you're using. So they have a ton of different new attachments. I know they have the disc grinder, and they have the fullering grinder part. They have the fullering tool, and then they have slack belts and, you know, all sorts of different platens. I think their platen is – I like their platen because it's super long, which is great for chef knives. Their tables are really great. BroadbeckIronworks.com, promo code KNIFETALK10, and you get yourself the 10% off with Broadbeck Ironworks.
Cool. And that's not just the grinder. That's for accessories as well. That's very
– Yeah, whatever you want. Put in a full blast 10 and see what happens. I mean, I don't know what
he's got to slip it in, hasn't he? Yeah. That's what she said, yeah.
Awful.
So, shall we talk about our hopes and dreams for the week?
Heavenly.
Okay. So, Quentin, this is the bit where we talk about what we plan to be doing this week. But this is slightly different because we're actually having 2 weeks off now. So we'll be back on... I'll work out the date in just a second. But yeah, the next two Fridays, we're not having a show. That's what we're saying. So long term, that's for the next month. What's your dream for the next month? I can only imagine.
Well, let's see. Having a successful damn Kickstarter, that's number one. And if you haven't already, click the go to Middleton Made Knives on Instagram and click my bio link, and you can go straight to it and fun. And the next one is having fun with my family, because the reason why I became a knife maker is to have fun with my family and watch my family grow and just have those times, because just like I said earlier, you got to give time. Being a knife maker, that funds my fun. So I need to have fun with my family, because time comes and time goes. So I need to enjoy them while they're here.
Fully agree. Mareko. Lillian, I just hope my back. Hopes and dreams.
My month of hopes and dreams. I am looking forward to my back not freaking out on me. Next week, I'm going to be going and checking out, go visiting my chiropractor and get some of that figured out. And yeah, I'm looking forward to my back not being so twisted out of shape that I can actually do some work in the shop this week, or I guess next week.
Nice. I'll go next. I know Jeff's got some big plans, I think, for the next couple of weeks. So I'm hoping to resolve this problem with the boatload of brass that I've ordered. I'm hoping that can be resolved, and I'm hoping that I can get back on to making these things, because I'm at a stage where I'm putting the final scales on a couple of hundred of these. So yeah, I'm hoping that can be resolved very quickly, and by the time we get back in maybe 3 weeks' time, I'm ready to sort of launch these and start selling these. So that would be cool. Other hopes and dreams, there is the Euros, which is the European Championships football that's been going on for the last 4 or 5 weeks. It's the final on Sunday, and Italy are in the final with England. And I'm hoping Italy win. So that's my hopes and dreams. So Jeff, what have you got planned for the next 3 weeks?
I got 7 days to knock out a pile of knives, which I can do. I'm not worried about it. I'm very excited about that. And we're going to be going away to visit my wife's family, and that's great. And hopefully we can get my roof, this short roof, fixed before we leave, which may or may not happen. Who knows? I got a guy coming on Sunday. It's not what you want, but what can you do, right? Looking forward to all that. But here's what I'm looking forward to, and I'm going to talk to the listeners of this podcast. We don't ask for much. We don't ask for much. We give you a lot, way more than most. We don't do Patreon. We don't, not that there's anything wrong with that, but we don't do any of that. We give you discounts all over the place, up the wazoo. We give you content. This is what I'm asking for you guys to do. It's very important as a community to be supportive of our community. And one of our community members is an OG. That's Quentin Middleton. So you need to do a few things. One is you need to support him. And you need to support him by either putting up some dough, or support him by telling your people that you know, putting on social media, reposting his stuff, redoing the stories, making sure that you can be as helpful to him as possible. Because if it's not, I mean, you can't get more deserving than and a great guy than Quentin Middleton. We want to make sure that he ends up fast with his goal. We don't want him, like, you know, we don't want it to be like the 12th hour and he's like twiddling his thumbs hoping a miracle happens. Make the miracle now. So I want you all to be helpful to him by supporting his Kickstarter, but also helping him use your social media to just push it. If you don't have the dough, understand, but help pushing him. And that's all I have to say, but it's very, very important. And we're sending you our best vibes for a fast resolution and get that Kickstarter squared away. I want my owner. PS, I want my Ona. So that's hashtag I want my Ona. Give me my Ona. I want my Ona.
I think that's a show. I think that's a show. Lyle Style has just put on the in the chat that there's only two spots left for the $275 owner. So yeah, if you're watching live now, you're in with a chance. Don't wait till Monday. You're in with a chance. Get in there now. Get in there now. That's a show. Thank you all for listening, and we shall speak to you all in 3 weeks' time. 2 weeks off, so we'll be back in 3 weeks' time. Bye for now.
This show is brought to you by The Makery, the podcast network for makers.
Quentin, this is the after show, so don't say anything terrible. We're still recording. Is this still the show?
I'll say something stupid.
Don't say anything you're going to regret. This is just the, now we just fool around for a little bit, but just, okay. You know, just careful. Yeah. You know,
thank you for the disclaimer. I appreciate it.
Pressure's off. The pressure.
Wow. I mean, you know, all of a sudden it's just like stabbing hookers. Let's talk about that some more. You know?
That reminds me of something. Yeah. Right, you three have. I'm going to go and get some of that material a sec because I just want to show you.
Oh yeah,
it's pretty cool stuff. So you three carry on, and I'll be back in just a sec.
Quinn, I wanted to ask you.
Go ahead.
Oh,
go ahead,
Marco. Quinn, go ahead.
So you are. You're doing these giveaways in parallel with your campaign, right? To help encourage people to help share. And how do people become part of these giveaways? Because you just gave one away this morning, but you said you got another one that's got all the engraving on it coming out next week.
Yeah. So, yes. So basically it's just sharing on your Instagram or Facebook about the Kickstarter and tagging me to it. So I'll know that you're sharing it. And then, on Friday, I announced the winner and just do a random thing and whoever gets it.
Was that in stories or in the feed or?
It can be in the feeds. It can be in a story. It could be on the side of your mama car. It doesn't matter.
We all know that, Quentin, we all know that if any one of us wins, the fix is in. So we're kind of excluded, right?
Oh yeah,
we're not well.
Anytime I win anything, everyone says the fix is in. So I don't.
The fix is in.
I don't want to get involved. I don't want people to think that the fix is in. So
no, it's not. It's not.
I'm interested, Quentin, about the Kickstarter. It's U.S. only.
Yes.
Will there be plans to sell after the Kickstarter, then, like globally, or what's the story?
Yes. So after the Kickstarter, I will be doing it worldwide. And there's another person that's answering, Griffin Handmade Knives. He's been asking the whole show what kind of locking mechanism I have. Basically, it's a frame lock. And it has a titanium. It's a titanium frame lock and a stainless steel on the locking face. So the titanium, of course, wears away kind of fast. So the stainless steel locking face helps keeps the wear down. So yeah, it's basically a frame lock.
Cool.
I thought about access. Oh, is the access lock like the bench bay locks? I thought about that, and this is just easier to make. That's the only reason why.
Cool. Sure. Cool. This material. Let me show the material. We'll start. I've got a few sheets of it here. So it's.
Are you gonna get high touching it like that?
Yeah,
it smells of licorice. Seriously, it smells of licorice.
Yeah,
but it's. So yeah, let me pull it closer. You can't quite. I don't know if you can see. There's this like grain to it.
Right.
And it's almost like almost like a copper effect to it. You know. It's really cool stuff, and each one is obviously slightly different because it shows the fibers of the hemp. But it's super hard, and because it's got the sugarcane resin in it, it's obviously a natural material. But it's almost like stabilized, you know, with this resin. It's super cool stuff. So yeah, so I'm hoping to get a few chef knives done over the next week or so, and start posting them. But yeah, I'm pretty pleased. I haven't seen anybody else using hemp in this way before, not with a natural resin as well. So it's cool stuff.
Nice.
I was gonna ask you, Quentin, about your brother. I know your brother's a chef.
Is he using
your knives?
Of course. Like, there's a video on my Instagram page of someone breaking down a whole chicken. That's my brother.
Ah, cool.
That's awesome. Like, so he's the one that flick it out and just kind of breaking up the whole chicken.
He's involved with some incredible chefs down in your area too. BJ, what's BJ's last name?
I forget. Dennis.
BJ Dennis is an incredibly important chef down in that area, specializing in Geechee food, Gullah Geechee food.
Gullah Geechee, yeah.
The Gullah Geechee, we talked about it on the Full Blast, but I mean, it is to this day, it fascinates the shit out of me because it's like this incredible culture, such an incredible wealth of culture. But the fact that he's part of that community, that your brother's a part of that culinary community, it's really amazing.
Truthfully, BJ Dennis is Gullah Geechee, and me and Marcus, we are Geechee. So Gullah Geechee is the people that live closer to the coast, and the Geechee are the people that lives a little bit more inland. But we all derived from the African, like the Ivory Coast, Ghana, Nigeria, and we all came here. Oh, when I came, we were forced here, and to work on rice plantations. The resin you're using, sugarcane. So it was all tied into all of that. So, but I'm getting tied up over my words, but we kind of kept our heritage going, and we kind of interact with one another and tell the story and kept the stories going so we can keep it alive, really.
I'm dying to ask you this question. You posted about it a few months ago, and you were able to use wood from a plantation.
Yes,
that was part of your history.
Yes.
Can you tell that story? It's incredible.
So it's this plantation called Middleton's Plantation. There's this very old live oak tree, it's been there since slavery time, and they reached out to me. They wanted me to make some I make this oyster knife, a brew shucker, and I wanted to they wanted to put the handle material on it, and so I did it, and they gave me some, and I had it for a long time, and I had this photographer do some work for me, and he told me, I want you to make a killer knife. I want you to make the most special knife that you can ever make. So I thought about using that wood for it. And to think about it and work with it, it was just very emotional because I'm using something that maybe my ancestors were hung on, that were beat on. It almost made me cry just thinking about it. Most people don't really think about that. When they hear about slavery, they just think about work, but you got to think about the pain that went into that. Most people can track their ancestry and go right to it. Like, oh, I know my great, great, great grandfather is named John, and he worked on in the shipyard. I can't say that. I don't know where they are. Because families were broken, and families were destroyed and crossbreed and all kind of stuff. It's just a lot of pain is in that. So, and you can hear it in my voice a little bit, but
yeah,
to take something that has so much pain in it, so much suffering in it, and kind of flip the strip a little bit and reuse it to make something beautiful from my ancestors that were slaves into someone that's a craftsman and crafting it into something that's beautiful and useful. And also the Damascus I made, it was a ladder pattern Damascus, about 280 layers, but normally my knives are very thin and very light and airy, but I made sure this knife is heavy because I want the person that has it to be reminded that you're holding my history in your hand. You're holding something that's very heavy and very deep to me. So it was a lot. It was a lot.
Yeah.
Jeez. Yeah. Wow.
For sure. Wow. That is incredible. I mean, I remember when you were we were talking about it, and it really took me back to thinking. I mean, the thought of these kind of like generations and what this piece, this tree is seen, and then you getting it and you turning it into something. It is so heavy. It's so heavy.
Yeah. Most makers, like maybe once in a lifetime, you have something that
you have to think about when you're making it, and it touches you emotionally, physically, spiritually. And this was that thing for me where I'm just like, I had to really dig deep, and I almost didn't give it to him. I set it in my shop for maybe about 3 months before I gave it to him because it was that heavy. And I was like, oh wow, this, I don't know, because this is something. Is he didn't pay for it. It was something I gifted to him. Like, but even if I had to sell it, I probably wouldn't sell it. I have a lot of the wood left, so I may do like a heritage collection. Like, but it's still something that's heavy for me.
Yes, yeah. When you save it for your master smith, when you ever do the ABS master smith.
I don't think I ever would be a master smith, man, because I have a thing about that. Back in 2014, I was getting ready to do my, I passed my cut and bend test and everything. I made my 5 knives, getting ready to submit my knives to the judges and everything. I think maybe a couple of days before getting ready to go to submit my knives, I backed out. And the reason why I backed out is because how can that panel tell me how to make my knives? And because at the time, chef knives wasn't really popular. Like, there was only maybe a handful of people making chef knives. So how can I need to make the plunge lines right, and I need to do all kind of stuff. I need to make the shoulder guards right, and all these things and parameters that they want. And that wasn't really my knife. So how can they tell me what I want? So It was just like, say, bump it. I'm a do me.
That's crazy. I never knew that story. That was the first year I met you. It was in 2000.
Yeah, that was first year. Yeah.
If you cough up that oak, you're sliding through. Bring that heritage wood. You're sliding. You could just
slide right through.
The rest of the way. To get the rest of the way, no one's gonna say a fucking thing. Perfect.
I've got one more question for you, Quentin, and this is something that we like to do on the show whenever we have a guest. And what I'm going to do, I'm going to put you on the big screen here.
Okay.
I want you to come right close up to the screen so people can see the whites of your eyes. You want to see exactly your reaction to this question. So we've had guests on the show before, and we'd like to put a bit of pressure on them at the time. So we're wondering, once this Onan knife is off Kickstarter and it's available for sale on the
website... Don't do it. Will we be offering
the discount with Knife Talk 10? Now look us down the camera. Knife Talk 10 for 10% off.
This show is brought to you by The Makery, the podcast network for makers.
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, excursions, and more in one place. There are over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from, so you can find something for everyone. And Viator offers free cancellation and 24/7 customer support for worry-free travel. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.